This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The Indian film industry is the largest and most prolific in the world, but most films emerging from Bollywood focus purely on entertainment. Now, writer and director Leena Yadav has released a new film called Parched, which takes on social issues in a thought-provoking and yet engaging way. Set in a fictitious Indian village that has just begun accessing modern technology, Parched features four very different women who find themselves frustrated with their circumstances, most of which involve being oppressed by patriarchal traditions. Yadav weaves into the film the issues of domestic violence, motherhood, prostitution, marriage, and women's education while maintaining a sense of humor and a yearning for life in the interactions between the women. Parched will be released in the US on DVD and video on demand on August 9th. And now joining me from India is the writer, producer, and director of Parched. Welcome to the program, Leena Yadav.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, tell us about the process of making this film. This, as I mentioned, is a fictitious Indian village, but I understand that you first did a lot of groundwork visiting rural parts of India, talking to rural women to try to understand what the main issues were, and then crafting these characters based in part on some of the women you met.
Yes, it did start off with lots of conversations in lots of rural areas in India. And that's why I made it a fictitious village at the end of it, because I thought the stories applied across a lot of these villages, and I didn't want it to be based in a particular village. But the main revelation to me was when I came back to Bombay and I started writing the script, I realized exactly the same stories were happening in my backyard. And then I shared my script with people across the world, and they wrote back more stories from various places that they were in. So what I realized is that, you know, education and progress haven't really cured a lot of these deep-rooted beliefs and limiting beliefs and conditioning that we all suffer from, where there is still this lurking patriarchy, where there is still limiting beliefs which are fed in generation after generation into our minds. That was what really made me want to make this film, because I realized there are so many dialogues just waiting to happen. And yes, the basic, birth of a lot of these characters were based on real women, but they kept getting more and more fleshed out with more and more stories and feedback that I kept getting.
So let's talk about one of the main characters, Rani. She's actually a relatively young woman, but her backstory is that she was married at a very young age and then lost her husband and lived as a widow. And then the film starts out with her trying to arrange her teenage son's wedding to a 15-year-old girl. And she starts out saying in the movie that somewhere in the movie that she hasn't been touched in years, and more than 10 years. Tell us a little bit about this character.
Yes. So I met a woman who was widowed at 15. She was married at 12 and widowed at 15. And she spent her life just bringing up. She had two kids, not just one. She just brought up the kids. And in a very interesting way, how society made that like a trophy for her, that, you know, look at this woman that has sacrificed her life and she's just spent it on her kids. And she started feeling good about that. And, you know, Rani's character does come from that person who starts believing that, you know, I'm nobody and this is what my life is meant to be for somebody else. Everything is for, you know, first it's for the husband and then for the kids. So where am I over here? You know, where do I get lost? And she hadn't been touched in many years. And at a very young age, she started behaving like she's an old woman and her life is over.
And then there's her friend, Lajjo, a woman who thinks she can't get pregnant. Well, she can't get pregnant. She's married to a person who routinely beats her up. Now, of course, domestic violence, which is one of the most sort of disturbing issues that you take on in the film, but it is basically a widespread practice that we don't often address, even though it happens in working class communities and rural communities all the way into urban communities as well. How important was it for you to show that that sort of brutality on the screen?
It was, you know, I think sometimes cinema needs to show you a mirror. For even somebody who's probably been a witness or a victim of a circumstance like this to see it. And so it's important to get uncomfortable sometimes, because this is a subject which really needs addressing worldwide. Like you said, it's not, we all want to believe it's all happening there. So the upper class believes it's happening in the lower class. The West thinks it's all happening in India, you know? So we are all trying to say it's their problem. My question is, even if it's happening in one part of the world, it's all our problem. It's a human problem. So why does it make us more comfortable that it's happening there?
And then so you have
That is the dialogue I wanted to create with the film, and for people to acknowledge that it is happening in their backyards too. I mean, it's happening across the world. And now I can say that for sure. I've traveled with the film halfway across the world, and I've had women come and tell me the most horrendous stories.
And then there you have the character of Bijli, the dancing girl, whose appearance on the screen perhaps most closely resembles what a Western audience might expect to see in a typical Bollywood film. But of course, the dark underbelly of her character is that she's not just a dancing girl, she is a prostitute. Is this a Bollywoodized aspect of the film, or how real are these kinds of institutions within India, where you have this kind of entertainment that's purely there to titillate male audiences?
So Bijli's character and the dancing troupe is based on actual dancing troupes, which are called cultural shows. Only liberty that I've taken is that they generally happen in the north of India, and I placed it in, like, say, a Gujarat, Rajasthan region. They happen rampantly in UP, Bihar, Madhya Pradesh, you know, in the north of India, where there are these troops which go around. Women dance on stage to extremely sexual lyrics, and thousands of men, you know, watch that and get whatever the sexual releases. That speaks so much of the kind of repression there is, sexual repression there is. And in fact, it almost replayed for me in the film, because that was some of the sequences. So it's really based on real, you know, real things. And it's not at all a Bollywoodized portion of the film. So when I was shooting those songs, I actually used the real villagers.
In the audience.
And I had to, almost my whole unit was employed in just controlling the crowds. Wow. I mean, and I could see that any second this could become violence. We shot this over 3 days. And I remember the whole Bijli thing was it's a set. And for the next 15 days, we had men from the neighboring villages coming and banging the set, the ticket window, and saying, we want to watch Bijli.
Wow. Now, of course, here in the West, where my audience is primarily located, we have similar exposure, except on the television or on the internet. Essentially, this is a sort of pornography, the counterpart to pornography that people view here. Again, not just an Indian phenomenon. I want to bring up the fourth character, which I really appreciate. She's has less screen time and dialogue than the other three adult women, but the character of Janaki, which is the teenage bride that Rani, the first character we talked about, marries off to her son, is also a very precocious character, and in her own way struggles to take control of her own life. How important was it for you to sort of portray a child bride from her perspective, someone who actually could speak to the audience?
So the challenge with Janaki, like you said, I think she has hardly any dialogue in the film, but her impact is immense, because I've had audiences come away and say that she was their favorite character in the film. So through Rani and Janaki, basically I was exploring the whole cycle where you keep passing on things that you've been through. It's almost like you punish the next generation for the hardships you had. And these things will never go away, and how Rani breaks that cycle between her and her daughter-in-law, you know? Mm-hmm.
And then the sort of overarching theme that I felt in your film was also trying to take on this issue of women's education. The village is sort of just entering modern era. There's a, you know, a theme around the women in the film wanting to acquire a television set, a satellite TV. And some of the characters have cell phones and their interactions with the world and the fears with what modern technology might bring. How real are those in rural India?
They are very real. I mean, you know, in a lot of these villages, you go and you feel like they're centuries, they're living a life which is centuries old. But at the same time, every house, they may not have a meal to eat, but they have a television and they have a cell phone. So it's like two parallel lives existing where, you know, there is this need for control and order and, you know, discipline. But at the other level, you cannot stop it. And this is the situation of the world today. I see all the countries, the, you know, the power structures are getting, trying to get more and more in, you know, get control of the situation. But we live in an era where it's all out there, you know, so what are we going to do? Right. I mean, how does today, how does censorship, what does it mean? Anybody can put anything onto the internet and it can be everywhere. So how does the role of a censor of a country matter? I mean, so they have to adapt to it instead of putting a blind eye and saying, no, but we want control. So it's so everywhere there's this, you know, this pull towards going backwards and wanting control at the same time, not acknowledging that it's a free, you know, it's information is available to everybody today.
Women's education, of course, is a really important social issue, not just in India, but the world over. In fact, over and over again, social indicators point out that the sort of modernization of a country, freedoms and democracy are intimately linked to the levels of education that women have. And there's several times in the film where the women themselves, Rani, the main character in the film, sort of repeats a line that she's been told, that educated women make bad wives. So I'm wondering if you can address this issue of how crucial women's education is and whether that was an important message for you to convey through your film.
Absolutely. So basically, by keeping away this education, why does a woman who read make a bad wife? It's because she learns to question, she learns to challenge. And isn't it ironical that in a village where these women are going to earn the money, they still have to ask the men for permission to buy the TV?
Right, you know? Right. And so the women are many, in many cases, the breadwinners. In the case of your film, women are making handicrafts, but the fact that they're earning money threatens their husbands and their the masculinity.
No, and I find in more progressive societies, things have not really changed. So they've put women in the most top positions, but still the permission has to come from a man still far above. You know, it's very ironical. Which is why even content of women is controlled.
Right. Lina, you are one of a few Indian female producers, directors, and writers in the film industry in India, but also really worldwide. What are some of the challenges that you have faced yourself, not just in making this film, but in your industry and in your career and vocation?
I was brought up by parents who really didn't let me believe that I was anything different because I was a girl. So I really have them to thank, because I'm like a bull where if I need to do something, I just do it. And I think if I face challenges, the only challenge I remember is probably once in my life when I was an editor, where these men walked out of the studio because they said, no, you can't edit. I mean, hello, you don't look like an editor. So other than that, I'm sure I must have had people, but I think it was their beliefs that were restricting and mine were not. And I didn't let anything stop me from doing what I needed to do.
Now, the camaraderie between the women in your film is also really important. It's rare to find films where women are the central characters, where they talk to one another. Your film greatly passed the Bechdel test, which is, of course, a test here in the US of women playing central roles in films. How important was it for you to show not just moments of sort of friendship and also conflict, but even moments of intimacy and even sexual intimacy between the women characters?
It was very important, you know, because a lot of times I used to see these male buddy films and I said, you know, we have much more fun than this. Why doesn't somebody put that out there? when we girls get together, we can really, really have a, you know, too much fun. And, you know, we also sit and talk about sex. We make fun of men, whatever, you know. But I've only seen men do that in films.
Yeah.
So it was really important. And for me, you called it intimacy. But for me, touch is a very important theme as a storyteller that I want to keep reminding people about. Because I think in, again, with progress, we are forgetting to touch each other because we need to be touched. I think touch is the most powerful vitamin, more powerful than any pill you can have. I mean, what a hug can do to you, I doubt a pill can give you that strength. So for me, that intimacy, and I am that person, I have friends around me, we touch each other, we hug each other at the given, you know, at the drop of a hat. I want to reconnect people to that because I sometimes look at people and I feel like, oh my God, they just need a hug.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's not as common in Indian culture as we might like. I mean, my relatives don't hug one another very much. We'll touch the feet of our elders, but we don't necessarily hug each other.
But I've started making everybody around me do it and they're all happy peeps. During the post-production of my film in LA, I was called the Hugging Indian.
Watch it. You might end up being able to charge for that service, as we know at least one person does. Well, finally, I want to ask you about the look of the film, which I think is really important. The film has a very rich look, and I understand you brought on a very high-profile cinematographer on board. Tell us a little bit about that.
So basically, my earlier two films were shot by my husband, who's a brilliant, brilliant cinematographer. But with Pash, because we were not getting anybody to produce the film, he said he'll produce it and raise the finance. So he said, I won't be able to shoot the film. So he made me a promise that I'm going to get you somebody who I really look up to. And we had the fortune of meeting and collaborating with Russell a couple of years back. And we sent him the script and he reacted really, really very beautifully and sensitively to it. And for me, it was very interesting to get an outsider to come and shoot the film for whom these villages are very unique. I wanted him to bring that eye of catching the beauty because there's so much beauty which, you know, we've forgotten to see.
And this is Russell Carpenter, the cinematographer.
Yeah, Russell Carpenter. So I think more than us affording him, he afforded the film and he really brought so much into this film. And just the way he looked at everything, at the emotions, at the characters, just the way he, you know, the way he lit up the heart every time is so beautiful.
And he's the director of photography of the film Parched, which is coming out on August 9th in the United States in DVD and video on demand across all digital platforms, including iTunes and Vimeo. Oh, finally, Lina, how has the film been received in India? You mentioned the issue of censorship earlier, and this is an issue that a lot of Indian filmmakers have had to struggle with any time they touch upon taboo subjects, especially when it involves any kind of sexuality. How has it been received by the censor board and by Indian audiences?
So we are planning a release of the film hopefully in September, and we are actually just in the process of putting it through the censor board. And you know what, I'm very optimistic. I feel things are changing, and the fact that a film like this got made, I know we've not had nudity in our films ever, we are the land of Kama Sutra, but we're in complete denial of it. We don't have sex, our kids are picked up at the mandir. But anyway, the thing is that I'm very optimistic. Till something bad happens, I don't want to preempt it. I want to believe that the film has some power which is going to speak to even the censor board and they're going to pass it. If they have a problem with the nudity, I'll blur out the breast, but I will not take out the scene.
Yeah. And so the film has not actually been viewed in India yet. American audiences can get a hold of it by getting it on video on demand as well as DVD. Lina, best of luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sonali.
Lina Yadav is the writer, producer, and director of Parched. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.